Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
Welcome back to The Deep Dive. Today, we're doing something a little different. We're zooming right in, taking a really close look at the sheer speed of AI development by focusing on just one single day, June 6th, 2024.
It's honestly incredible when you do that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just looking at the news, the updates, the announcements from a single 24-hour period. It gives you such a vivid snapshot of this whole field just constantly moving. We've basically taken a stack of sources, what we're calling the AI Daily Chronicle for June 6th, and we're going to break it down.
Yeah, and our mission here is really to unpack all these updates, not just list them off, but, you know, pull out the important bits, the real insights, and try to understand what all this rapid change actually means for you listening in as AI gets more and more tangled up in, well, everything we do.
Exactly. June 6th, it works as this perfect microcosm. It shows the dynamism, the diversity of where AI is going right now. It touches everything from the really big foundational models coming out of the major tech players,
yeah,
all the way to very tangible things like healthcare, how packages get delivered, even history and international security.
We've got a really fascinating range to cover today. We'll be looking at some key updates from Google, from Anthropic. We'll get into some genuinely surprising new applications that are happening, like right now in health, in logistics. We'll touch on the really crucial talks around safety, the intense competition that's driving everything forward, and even get some glimpses of, well, entirely new areas AI is starting to unlock.
And the aim is to walk you through all this in a way that feels, you know, approachable, engaging.
Yeah.
We want to connect the dots, give you those aha moments where you see how different bits of news fit together, but without drowning you in jargon or making it feel like reading a dense report.
All right, let's dive in. We usually like to start at the source, right? The big AI models themselves and the, well, the fierce competition between the labs building them. And the Chronicle for June 6th kicks off with a pretty major move from Google.
It does, yeah. Google announced and actually started rolling out a really substantial upgrade to their Gemini 2.5 Pro model. And they didn't position this as just, you know, a little tweak. It felt like a significant step up for their main model.
And the specific improvements they were talking about were in some really critical areas, weren't they?
Absolutely. They specifically pointed to improvements in multimodal reasoning. That's the AI's ability to understand and work with different kinds of information at the same time, like looking at a picture and reading related text and making sense of it all together.
Mm.
They also talked about better programming accuracy, which is, you know, vital for developers using AI to help write or understand code.
Yeah.
And also better long context understanding. So processing much bigger chunks of text or longer conversations without sort of losing the thread.
Right. And performance metrics were a big part of their announcement. The source we looked at mentioned reports of major performance gains and specifically said Gemini 2.5 Pro had extended its lead on user preference leaderboards like Elmarina and WebDev Arena.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's a really telling detail, I think. These user preference leaderboards, they're not like your standard academic benchmarks, which often test very specific things in a controlled way. Elmarina, for example, pulls together data from tons of real users trying out different models with all sorts of prompts. And WebDev Arena is focused purely on coding tasks. Leading on these suggests that Google's improvements aren't just theoretical. They're actually making the model feel better, more helpful to real people doing practical things, especially developers, it seems. It's a strong sign of, you know, real-world usefulness.
They also made a point of saying they addressed user feedback, which always feels important. The report mentioned they fixed performance regressions, basically. Dips in performance in non-coding tasks that users had noticed before. Creative writing improvements was the example given.
Mm-hmm. And that really highlights how tricky it is to keep improving these massive, complex systems. Sometimes when you push really hard to make the AI better at one thing, like coding, you might accidentally make it a bit worse at something else, like, say, writing a poem. So fixing those regressions shows they're listening to users and trying to keep the model well-rounded. It underlines the fact that building an AI that's great at everything, structured logic, and free-form creativity, is this constant, really hard balancing act. You can't just focus on one side.
And there is this interesting technical detail mentioned, the introduction of thinking budgets in the API. Now, that sounds like something developers and businesses would really pay attention to.
Oh, absolutely. Thinking budgets. That's a really key concept if you want businesses and developers to actually use your AI seriously. But let's break it down simply. When you send a request to a powerful AI model, especially a complex one, the amount of computer power, the thinking time or processing it needs, can actually vary quite a bit depending on the request. And that variation, it makes costs unpredictable, and it makes the response time, the latency, unpredictable too.
So the budget is basically like putting a cap on how much thinking the AI does for one request to keep things predictable.
Exactly. It lets the developer say, okay, for this kind of request, don't spend more than X amount of compute resource. This gives predictability. Businesses need to know roughly how much each AI interaction is going to cost and how fast it's going to be. Thinking budgets provide that control. It makes building commercial apps or internal tools on top of the AI much less risky financially and operationally. The fact that this was in preview, heading for official release, shows Google knows it's crucial for getting wider business adoption.
And where is this upgraded model actually showing up? For developers and for regular users.
So the upgraded preview is available for developers right now through the Gemini API. You can access it via AI Studio and Vertex AI. But, and this is important, Google is also pushing this improved version out to the public Gemini, the chat interface that, you know, millions of people use directly.
That dual rollout feels key, hitting both the builders and the users at the same time.
Yeah, it clearly shows their strategy, right? Improve the core tech, then get it everywhere. Let developers build cool new stuff and make the experience better for everyday consumers immediately.
Okay, so let's tie this Google update together. Looking at the bigger AI picture on June 6th, what does this Gemini 2.5 Pro rollout really tell us?
Well, it confirms Google is absolutely locked in this intense head-to-head race with OpenAI with Anthropic, right at the cutting edge of model development. Pushing out an upgrade like this and seeing it reflected in those user preference scores, it suggests they're really executing on their technical plans and their stated goal aiming for dominance in both enterprise and consumer applications that highlights just how broad their ambition is.
Why is that dual focus so important? Aiming for dominance in both business use and consumer use.
Look, it's fundamentally about long-term leadership in AI. The consumer side gives you massive scale, right? Billions of interactions, invaluable feedback. It builds brand recognition, user habits, getting people comfortable using your AI. That comfort then feeds enterprise interest. But the enterprise market, that's where the big contracts are. Deep integration into critical business processes, and it proves your tech is robust, reliable for really demanding stuff. Plus, enterprise use often generates unique, high-value data and challenges that push the models further. Winning in both creates this powerful feedback loop. Improvements in one area help the other, making your whole AI ecosystem really hard for competitors, especially those maybe strong in only one area, to beat.
Okay, shifting slightly, but staying with the big players. Anthropic also made news on June 6th, but it was less about a general update and more about a very specific, targeted version of their AI.
That's right. Anthropic introduced something called ClaudeGov. It's a version of their Claude AI model, specifically built and released for U.S. government agencies. So yeah, a very different kind of launch than a public model upgrade.
What's the main difference with ClaudeGov? What makes it special?
The key thing is that it's designed from the ground up to meet the really strict compliance rules, security standards, and operational needs you find in federal government, especially in sensitive areas. It's not just sticking the standard model behind a government network. It's about deep customization.
And the source material said it was already being used, not just announced.
Correct. Anthropic was clear. These models are already deployed, being used at the highest levels of U.S. national security. This isn't a test run or a maybe in the future thing. It's active use by people handling classified information.
Wow. Deploying AI at the highest levels of national security, that sends a pretty strong message about government trust and adoption, particularly for AI that's seen as trusted and safe, right?
It absolutely does. It tells us the U.S. government sees advanced AI not just as interesting tech, but as a necessary tool for modern national security and intelligence work. Putting it in the hands of people dealing with classified data signifies a deep level of trust, earned through, presumably, very tough testing and specific tailoring. It shows the government is moving pretty quickly to bring AI into its core functions, but with this huge emphasis on trusted and safe models. It's operational, not experimental, meaning AI is viewed as essential for critical missions, analysis, cyber defense. It's a major step for AI adoption in a place where mistakes or security flaws just aren't acceptable.
And the enhancements they mentioned for government needs were quite specific things like reduced refusal rates for classified material, better understanding of defense documents.
Yeah, let's unpack those a bit. Standard AIs, because of safety training, often refuse to discuss or process sensitive stuff. But for national security work, you need an AI that can analyze classified info without just saying, "I can't talk about that," while still being secure and preventing misuse. So reduced refusal rates means they've tuned it to handle sensitive data appropriately within that secure context. Better understanding of defense and intelligence documents means fine-tuning on all the specific jargon, acronyms, and formats the general models might trip over. And targeting mission-critical needs points to things vital for intelligence, like analyzing foreign language intercepts or spotting subtle patterns in huge datasets for cybersecurity threats. It's about giving human analysts powerful tools to speed up work that's currently very slow and labor-intensive.
It's interesting how they're making exemptions for government contracts but still keeping restrictions on clearly prohibited uses.
That really highlights the balancing act, doesn't it? You need to let the AI do powerful things for legitimate government work, like analyzing classified threats. But you absolutely have to stop it from being used for things like designing illegal weapons, running disinformation campaigns against your own allies, or conducting rogue cyber attacks. So Anthropic's approach seems to be create the necessary permissions for the government's job, but keep strong guardrails against those broadly harmful uses. It's a constant ethical and technical tightrope walk with powerful AI.
So the big picture takeaway from Anthropic launching Claude Gov.
I think the clearest takeaway is concrete proof that the U.S. government is rapidly integrating trusted AI agents into operations. This isn't just kicking the tires anymore. It signals mainstream institutional adoption of safe AI models for really high-stakes work. It also carves out a very significant specialized market for Anthropic and shows a path for how AI can be adopted even in super-regulated, highly sensitive fields.
Speaking of Anthropic and competition, that AI Daily Chronicle also had a story that really underlined just how intense things are getting between Anthropic and OpenAI.
Yes, that was a report about a very public statement from Anthropic co-founder Jared Kaplan, basically saying Anthropic will not be licensing or selling its Claude AI models to OpenAI, full stop.
And the reason given was pretty direct. Competition and trust issues.
Exactly. And the specific thing that seemed to prompt this statement, according to the source, was Anthropic cutting off direct access to Claude AI for a company called Windsurf.
Right, because OpenAI, which Anthropic calls its largest competitor, is reportedly in the process of buying Windsurf, which is an AI coding assistant company.
Precisely. So from Anthropic's viewpoint, it makes sense, right? Why keep feeding your core valuable tech to a company that's about to be swallowed by your main rival? Jared Kaplan's quote about it being odd to sell Claude directly to OpenAI just reinforces that hard competitive line.
He also mentioned another factor influencing these kinds of choices, Anthropic being computing constrained. What does that mean in practical terms?
Being computing constrained is a really fundamental issue for these big AI labs. Building and running these massive models like Claude or GPT-4 needs access to absolutely huge amounts of specialized computer hardware, mostly those high-end GPUs, graphics cards. These things are expensive, and there's a global scramble for them right now. So even the biggest, best-funded labs have limits on how much compute power they can actually get their hands on at any one time.
So it's like a physical bottleneck on their ability to operate and grow.
It really is. And when you're facing that kind of constraint, you have to be super strategic about where you use the compute you do have. So when Kaplan says they prefer to reserve capacity for lasting partnerships, it makes total sense. If you only have so much processing power, you're going to give it to partners you trust, partners who are strategically important to you long term, not use it to indirectly help your main competitor, even through another company. That compute limitation forces some really tough strategic decisions in this competitive environment.
This whole situation really just throws a spotlight on how intense that competition is.
It absolutely does. What it signals is that this AI arms race, as people call it, is continuing to sort of fragment the ecosystem. The top labs are increasingly guarding their models, guarding their core resources like compute and data.
And this is happening, as the source notes, amid rising competition and IP disputes.
Exactly. It feels like a pretty natural result when you have this kind of gold rush, where the core technology itself and the means to create it are the most valuable things. Companies are fiercely protecting their edge, and that leads to situations like this access denied, partnerships carefully chosen based on competition. And yeah, this guarding of resources can definitely lead to a more fragmented AI world compared to one where models and capabilities might have been shared or licensed more openly.
And there was another piece of news on June 6th that also revolved around protecting valuable resources, but this time it was about data. X, formerly Twitter, updated its terms.
Yes, X made a pretty significant change to its developer terms.
The main change being they banned using X content or its API for training AI models.
Correct. And the reason stated was pretty clear. They want to shield X's massive trove of social media data from rivals, almost certainly to benefit XAI, Elon Musk's own AI venture.
Remind us again why that social media data is so incredibly valuable for training AI models.
Oh, it's a goldmine. Platforms like X have this enormous, constantly updating stream of real human conversation. It covers every topic imaginable in countless styles, casual chat, arguments, news, jokes, official statements, all in real time. Training AI on this teaches it how language is actually used, the nuances, the slang, the sentiment, sarcasm. It helps the AI learn about current events, trends, what people are talking about right now. It's just a massive window into human thought and interaction, invaluable for building any AI that needs to understand or generate natural language.
So X's move is clearly about hoarding that resource for itself, stopping competitors from using its data fire hose to train their own models.
Absolutely. It's a strategic play in the data is the new oil aspect of the AI race. Controlling unique, valuable data is another major competitive lever, right alongside having the best model architecture or the most compute power.
It definitely reinforces this idea that who owns and controls data is becoming a central battleground in the AI competition.
Precisely. It's not just about algorithms anymore. It's very much about the fuel, the data, that makes those algorithms smart.
Okay, so we've covered some ground on the core model developments and the competitive dynamics shaping them. But AI wasn't just happening in labs and boardrooms on June 6th. It was also out there in the real world, doing things, impacting people directly. Let's switch gears to AI in action.
Yeah, one headline that really shows AI hitting the consumer space comes from Walmart and their drone delivery efforts.
Right, Walmart announced a really big expansion of their drone delivery service.
And we're not talking small scale here. Yeah. They explicitly said the goal is to reach millions of households across the country.
This expansion is a team up between Walmart and Wing, which is Alphabet's drone delivery company.
That's right. The plan they laid out was expanding drone delivery to 100 more U.S. stores over the next year, aiming to give millions of homes access to delivery in under 30 minutes.
Within 30 minutes? That phrase just leaps out. That's basically near-instant logistics. How does AI make something like that work at scale?
Well, AI is absolutely crucial for managing the sheer complexity of a drone network like this. I mean, think about all the moving parts. You need sophisticated systems for managing airspace, making sure drones don't bump into each other or other things, avoiding no-fly zones. You need dynamic route planning, finding the fastest, safest path for each delivery, constantly adjusting for weather or temporary restrictions. You need load balancing across different launch sites, managing drone battery levels and maintenance schedules, coordinating with the automated picking and packing systems in the store, providing real-time tracking for the customer. AI algorithms are essential for processing all that data constantly, making split-second decisions, and coordinating potentially hundreds or thousands of drone flights safely and efficiently. It's way beyond just simple GPS.
They mentioned bringing this Wing service to major new cities like Atlanta and Houston, and the companies were claiming this would create the largest U.S. drone delivery network.
That claim really signals their ambition, right? They want to make drone delivery a normal, everyday thing, not just some gimmick in a few test locations. Building the largest network is a major step towards setting the standard and scaling this up for potentially widespread use.
But the report did mention some initial limits in these new areas.
Yes, it's a phased rollout, which makes sense for something this complex. Initially, customers in these new cities will probably only be able to order from a limited selection of items. Hmm. Delivery itself is free via the Wing apps, but it won't be the full Walmart catalog right away. That's different from places like Dallas, where the service has been running longer and you can get more stuff.
So that phased approach lets them sort of test the waters in new environments.
Exactly. Test the tech, the logistics, the procedures in different urban or suburban settings, different layouts, maybe different local rules, different weather patterns before they open the floodgates with a full product range. It's just a smart way to scale something complex.
So zooming out again, what does this big drone expansion from Walmart really signify?
I think what it shows is that AI-powered logistics are moving really fast from being a cool future idea to becoming an everyday reality for potentially millions of people. This is a concrete example of AI changing retail, how we shop, what we expect in terms of speed, getting stuff in 30 minutes. That changes expectations. And of course, it seriously ramps up the race with Amazon in that critical last mile delivery space where speed and efficiency are everything.
Frame this for us as a tangible impact on consumer life. What are some potential ripple effects down the line?
For consumers, the immediate thing is just crazy convenience for certain items, getting medicine, maybe some groceries, essentials, almost instantly. Longer term, it could change local shopping. Maybe smaller local stores could tap into this network. It could impact traffic if lots of short car trips are replaced by drones. It might even subtly change purchasing habits if that instant gratification becomes normal for more things. It's really a fundamental shift in the logistics layer, connecting us to physical stuff, all orchestrated by AI.
Okay, sticking with AI changing how we interact with everyday things, let's shift back to information. Google was also making news testing something called Search Live.
Ah, yes. Reports surfaced that Google is quietly testing a new, real-time, AI-driven search feature called Search Live.
What's the core idea behind this? What can it do?
The goal seems to be integrating live, up-to-the-minute updates, context from the web, and AI-generated responses directly into the search experience. This testing is apparently happening within a specific AI mode inside the main Google app, and the tech powering the real-time conversational part is reportedly linked to their Project Astra initiative.
So, real-time and generative responses. That sounds very different from the usual 10 blue links, more like having a conversation with Google search itself.
That seems to be exactly the idea. Instead of typing keywords and getting a list of websites, Search Live aims to give you a synthesized answer, pulled from live web data, and deliver it conversationally, maybe even through voice. Project Astra is Google's big push to build helpful AI agents that can understand and interact, and here it looks like they're applying it to make search itself feel more like a knowledgeable agent you could just talk to.
How do users actually access this in the app?
According to the report, there's a new waveform icon, you know, like an audio wave appearing below the main search bar in the Google app. And interestingly, the report noted this icon actually replaces the old shortcut to your Google Lens gallery.
Swapping out a visual search shortcut for a conversational AI icon. That feels pretty deliberate.
It really does. It strongly suggests Google sees this kind of real-time conversational interaction as potentially more central to the future of search than, say, accessing your visual search history, at least right there in that prime spot below the search bar. It's a clear signal of strategic priority.
What can testers actually do with it right now?
Well, for the testers currently using it in Search Labs, it apparently allows for background audio chat so you can talk to search while doing other things, and it crucially shows the source websites. That's important. It's not just giving you an answer out of thin air. It's showing you where it got the information so you can check it or dig deeper.
But that really cool video feature they demoed earlier, pointing your camera at things, that's not live yet.
No, the source specifically mentioned that the ability to stream video from your camera and have a real-time conversation about what it's seeing isn't active for these testers yet. That feature definitely hints at powerful future multimodal search, but it looks like they're rolling things out piece by piece.
This whole concept feels like it could be a massive change in how we find information online. What are the potential implications here?
What this means, potentially, is huge. If Search Live gets widely adopted, it could fundamentally redefine how we interact with the internet. It has the potential to gradually push aside the traditional search results page as the main way we find things, shifting us towards interacting with these contextual AI agents that just synthesize information for us.
Frame this as that potential paradigm shift, moving from typing and clicking links to just asking an AI that summarizes the web. What are the upsides and downsides?
The big potential upside is speed and convenience, right? Getting a direct conversational answer, especially for complex questions or things happening right now, could be way faster and easier than clicking through multiple pages. It might make information more accessible, but the downsides are also really significant and heavily debated. Relying on one AI summary risks losing nuance, missing different perspectives found across multiple sources. It could massively disrupt websites that depend on search traffic for revenue publishers, creators. And there's always the risk the AI gets it wrong, presents biased info, outdated facts, or just misunderstands, which is why showing those sort of websites is so incredibly important. It lets users check the work and think critically. It's this fundamental trade-off between convenience and maybe the depth and reliability of information.
Okay, moving from information access to a totally different area, healthcare. AI is making some really powerful moves there too. The Chronicle highlighted this fascinating new AI-powered foot scanner.
Oh yeah, this is a fantastic example of AI applied directly to diagnostics. It's a new foot scanner, powered by AI, that's showing real promise in predicting the risk of heart failure weeks before serious symptoms show up.
A foot scanner for heart failure. How does that work? The connection isn't obvious.
It ties into a really common issue in worsening heart failure, which is fluid retention or edema. Because of gravity, excess fluid tends to pool in your feet and ankles. This AI scanner is designed to detect really subtle signs of that fluid buildup and the resulting pressure changes in the foot tissues, often well before you or even a doctor might see visible swelling.
And the tech sounds pretty high spec, capturing 1,800 images per minute.
Yes, that high capture rate generates a ton of data. And that's where the AI becomes absolutely essential. No human eye could possibly process that many images in real time or spot the tiny subtle variations in skin texture, color, or shape that signal the very beginnings of fluid buildup. The AI algorithms are trained to analyze this flood of visual data and find those patterns linked to edema that are essentially invisible to us, allowing for a quantitative measure of fluid accumulation.
And the accuracy they're seeing is pretty high.
The report mentioned potential for up to 80% accuracy in making that early prediction, which is really impressive for a diagnostic tool like this.
Did they test this in clinical trials?
They did. Initial trials were run across 5 NHS trusts over in the UK. It involved a relatively small group, 26 patients, who had all recently been hospitalized for heart failure.
And what did those first trials find? What were the key results?
The most striking finding was the early warning capability. The system managed to predict 5 out of 6 hospitalizations among those patients. And the really crucial part, the average warning time it provided was 13 days before the patient actually needed to go back to the hospital.
13 days, that is a significant amount of lead time.
It's potentially life-changing. For someone managing chronic heart failure, getting nearly 2 weeks' notice that things are worsening gives doctors and patients a critical window to intervene. Maybe adjust medications, increase monitoring, schedule a checkup, manage the fluid buildup before it gets so bad you need an emergency hospital admission. It's a real shift towards proactive preventative care driven by this kind of continuous subtle monitoring.
And it sounds like it was designed to be easy for patients to use at home.
Absolutely. The report said the device operates automatically without requiring patient interaction. You just use it, it does its thing. And the high user acceptance, over 80% of trial participants chose to keep the scanner even after the study finished, that tells you something. Ease of use and people seeing the value are critical if you want home health tech to actually be adopted and used consistently.
So what does this AI foot scanner tell us about the bigger picture of AI in healthcare?
I think what this really illustrates is how AI-driven diagnostics are making healthcare potentially more precise, preventative, and accessible. By spotting these tiny changes that humans miss, AI can give much earlier warnings for chronic diseases. This specific example is just a powerful case study in how AI is starting to revolutionize how we screen and monitor chronic diseases, maybe moving us away from just reacting to crises towards actually preventing them.
It's a really compelling example of AI improving health outcomes through early detection. What other kinds of conditions might benefit from similar AI-powered monitoring?
Oh, potentially many conditions where subtle, gradual physiological changes occur. You could imagine something similar for, say, chronic kidney disease, where fluid balance is also key. Or maybe monitoring subtle changes in feet for early signs of diabetic neuropathy. Even tracking tiny changes in how someone walks, their gait, could potentially give early warnings for neurological conditions like Parkinson's. Really, any disease where the progression involves measurable, subtle physical signs that an AI could be trained to detect over time could be a candidate for this kind of approach.
The Chronicle also mentioned some related progress in radiology, kind of reinforcing this AI diagnostics trend.
Yes, the report pointed to a groundbreaking AI system in radiology that's apparently setting a new standard. The main benefits highlighted were diagnosing complex radiology scans faster and more accurately than traditional methods, which significantly cuts down review times for radiologists.
Why is speeding up the review of complex scans like MRIs or CTs so important?
Well, these scans contain a huge amount of information, but interpreting them takes a lot of time and highly specialized expertise. Radiologists have to meticulously go through them, spot abnormalities, write reports. And the number of scans being done is always increasing, which can lead to backlogs. If AI can help speed up that review process accurately, it means patients get their diagnoses faster, which is critical for things like cancer, stroke, or trauma. It also helps radiology departments handle the volume more efficiently and frees up radiologists' time, maybe allowing them to focus on the really tricky cases or consult more with other doctors.
So connecting this radiology news back to the bigger picture.
What it signals is this accelerating shift towards AI-assisted diagnostics becoming more common. It's generally not about replacing the human expert, the radiologist, but about giving them better tools. It enhances early detection. Maybe the AI spots something subtle a tired human might miss. And it reduces the sheer burden on physicians by handling some of the high-volume analysis. It's a complementary tech making expert work faster and potentially more consistent.
Right. So the foot scanner and the radiology AI, two very different applications, but both showing how AI is enhancing medical diagnostics, one through new sensing, the other by improving analysis of existing images.
Exactly. It just shows the breadth of AI's potential impact in medicine, creating entirely new ways to diagnose and making established methods better.
Let's look at one more tangible, sort of everyday example of AI moving into physical systems. Volvo's reported smart seatbelt.
Yeah, this is a neat example of AI-enhancing safety tech we often take for granted. Volvo's apparently introducing a new seatbelt system that uses AI.
How is an AI-powered seatbelt different from the one we all have now?
Well, a standard seatbelt is pretty static, right? It's designed to lock up and hold you based mainly on the car's sudden deceleration in a crash. An AI-powered one is dynamic. It takes multiple factors into account in real time during the crash to customize how it restrains you.
What kind of factors does it consider?
According to the report, it looks at the passenger's estimated size and weight, their exact seating position at that moment, like, are they leaning forward, sitting perfectly upright? It also considers the vehicle's speed and the direction and severity of the impact itself. The AI analyzes all of this instantly to figure out the best timing and tension for the seatbelt for that specific person in that specific crash.
So it's moving towards a much more personalized safety response based on the immediate situation.
Precisely. Instead of a one-size-fits-all seatbelt reaction, the AI aims to tailor the restraint to potentially provide safer, more effective protection for you, specifically in that particular type of collision. It's a clear example of AI moving directly into critical physical safety systems in everyday things like our cars.
It really drives home that AI integration isn't just about screens and software. It's about making the physical objects around us smarter and safer.
Exactly. Embedding intelligence into the physical world to improve performance, efficiency, and safety in really practical ways.
Okay, so we've looked at the core model development, the competition, and a whole range of real-world applications happening right now. Let's widen the lens a bit now to AI's broader impacts, including the darker side, the potential for misuse, the ongoing debates about how to govern it, and also how it's opening up totally new avenues in fields like science and even art.
And unfortunately, a really crucial piece of news from June 6th highlights one of the biggest challenges we're facing. OpenAI's report on uncovering covert propaganda campaigns using its tools.
Yeah, this report made it chillingly clear that using AI for disinformation isn't some future hypothetical threat. It's happening now.
That's the stark reality presented. OpenAI identified and actually disrupted multiple coordinated influence operations that were actively using AI-generated content. The goal? To manipulate public opinion online across different platforms.
And these weren't random actors. They were linked to state governments, with the source specifically calling out China, Russia, and Iran.
Yes. OpenAI went into detail about disrupting 10 separate covert operations that had misused its AI. They were using AI tools specifically for creating online propaganda and facilitating social media manipulation.
What is it about generative AI that makes it such a potent tool for these kinds of campaigns?
Well, it dramatically lowers the barrier to entry for creating persuasive-sounding content at scale. Think about it. Instead of needing teams of human writers, translators, maybe graphic designers, to craft each piece of propaganda, these actors can use AI to generate huge volumes of text, translate it instantly, potentially create fake images or videos, and even tailor messages to specific audiences. It makes these campaigns cheaper, faster, much easier to scale up, and potentially harder to detect because the output can be varied. It can overwhelm traditional fact-checking and make it harder for regular people to know what's real.
The specific examples OpenAI gave were really quite eye-opening. There was this China-linked group they called Sneer Review.
Yes, and how they used ChatGPT was revealing. Sure, they used it to generate comments for social media. But the source also noted this bizarre detail. They were apparently using ChatGPT to write internal performance reviews for their own influence campaign operators.
That detail is just strange, but telling. It shows how deeply embedded AI is becoming, even in the bureaucratic parts of these malicious operations.
It really does. It's not just about the output. It's about using AI to make the whole operation more efficient. Another example, also linked to China, involved actors pretending to be journalists. They used ChatGPT for social media posts, sure, but also for translation, and quite worryingly, for analyzing a U.S. senator's correspondence.
Whoa, using AI to analyze a senator's mail, that definitely steps into potential espionage territory, facilitated by AI tools.
Absolutely. These concrete examples show the diverse and sophisticated ways state actors are already using advanced AI. It's moved beyond just generating fake news articles. They're using it for analysis, operational efficiency, potentially intelligence gathering within these malicious campaigns.
So the unavoidable big takeaway from OpenAI exposing this.
What this confirms, without a doubt, is that the weaponization of generative AI for misinformation is no longer speculative. It's not a what if, it is absolutely happening in real time. This is an active, ongoing threat.
This feels like one of the most urgent challenges AI presents. How do we even start to build resilience against this kind of AI-fueled propaganda?
It's got to be a multi-front effort. Technically, the AI labs and platforms have to keep working on ways to detect AI-generated content, maybe watermark it, identify coordinated fake accounts, just like OpenAI is doing here. The social media platforms themselves need strong policies, transparency about AI use, and effective enforcement. But critically, there's the human element. Media literacy is more important than ever. We all need to learn to be more skeptical, to check sources, to recognize manipulation tactics, and understand that convincing fake text, images, even video can be generated easily now. It's this constant difficult race between the misuse and the defenses.
Okay, moving from misuse to the complex question of how we manage all this. The Chronicle also touched on the ongoing debate about AI regulation, specifically mentioning an opinion piece by Anthropic CEO Dario Amodei.
Yes, Dario Amodei published an op-ed in the New York Times on June 6th.
And his argument was focused on a specific legislative idea that had been floated.
That's right. The report stated his piece argued against a particular proposal attributed to President Trump, a potential big, beautiful bill that would reportedly block individual states from creating their own AI regulations for 10 years.
Important here just to report this neutrally as part of the policy discussion. His stance, as reported, was against that specific idea of preempting state-level rules for a decade.
That was the position described in the source material, arguing against a long-term federal block on state-level AI regulation.
This really just highlights that even among the leaders building AI, there isn't one single view on how it should be governed. It's a live debate.
Absolutely. You should frame this as just one example of this very active, often quite intense discussion happening right now between AI company leaders, policymakers, researchers, civil society groups. Everyone is trying to figure out how to regulate this incredibly powerful, fast-moving technology. You have different camps advocating for different models, federal versus state, light touch versus strong guardrails. Amodei's op-ed is one prominent voice weighing in on one specific proposed approach. It just underscores that there's no easy consensus yet on the best path forward for AI governance.
Shifting now to some of the completely new frontiers AI is helping us explore. The Chronicle reported on AI being used to understand ancient history in a new way.
This is a really fascinating one. AI was used to analyze the Dead Sea Scrolls, arguably one of the most important archaeological discoveries ever.
How can AI analyze ancient scrolls? What is it actually looking at?
Well, in this specific case, the AI was trained to analyze incredibly subtle patterns in the handwriting style and also variations in the ink used on the scrolls. You know, these ancient texts are often damaged, faded. It's incredibly hard for human experts to analyze them consistently, especially trying to figure out if different sections were written by the same scribe or analyzing tiny differences in ink composition. AI, by processing high-res images, can spot microscopic variations in how strokes were made, the pressure used, the ink density, maybe even chemical patterns. It provides objective data points that can support or challenge traditional analysis methods.
And what did this AI analysis suggest about the scrolls?
The finding reported was that, based on this analysis, the scrolls might be significantly older than what scholars had previously estimated.
Wow. Using AI to potentially rewrite the timeline for such significant historical artifacts, that challenges long-held beliefs.
It really does. What this shows is AI becoming a genuinely vital tool in archaeology and historical research. By crunching data sets that are just too big or too subtle for humans to analyze effectively, AI can start to challenge historical assumptions and potentially unlock new insights into ancient civilizations and their writings.
Frame this as a really surprising application. AI isn't just about the future. It's helping us see our deep past more clearly. What other historical puzzles could AI tackle?
Oh, the possibilities are huge. Think about undeciphered ancient languages. AI could analyze them for statistical patterns, maybe find links to known languages. It could help authenticate artifacts by analyzing material composition or stylistic details more objectively. It could sift through masses of archaeological dig data to find subtle patterns in settlements or trade routes. It might even help digitally reconstruct fragmented texts or damaged objects. Basically, anywhere you have large, complex, or degraded historical data, AI offers a new lens.
From ancient history to modern environmental challenges, AI is also playing a role in materials science breakthroughs, specifically mentioned in relation to a new kind of plastic.
This is potentially huge news, given the nightmare of plastic pollution. Scientists have developed a new plastic material that does something revolutionary. It completely breaks down in seawater, apparently within hours.
And this came from researchers in Japan.
Yes, according to the report. The key is how it works. When it's exposed to salt water, it dissolves back into its original components. And then, this is crucial, naturally occurring bacteria in the ocean can actually process those components.
So unlike a lot of biodegradable plastics, it doesn't just crumble into tiny microplastics that stick around forever. It actually disappears safely.
Exactly. That's the massive environmental win highlighted. It leaves no harmful residues or microplastic particles. It breaks down into harmless basic building blocks that can just re-enter the natural cycle. It tackles the core problem of persistent ocean plastic.
And they demonstrated this in the lab.
Yes, successfully shown in a Tokyo lab. The report also mentioned the base material itself is non-toxic and fire-resistant, which are good bonus properties.
Are there still hurdles before we see this everywhere?
Oh, for sure. The source noted that the base material currently needs some kind of coating to make it function like regular plastic for everyday uses, and the team is still working on perfecting that. So the core science is a breakthrough, but there are definitely steps needed before it could be commercialized and widely used.
How might AI have helped in developing something like this? Where does it fit into material science?
AI is becoming increasingly important in discovering new materials. Finding a material with specific properties like degrading in salt water but being durable otherwise is incredibly complex. AI can help researchers explore vast possibilities of chemical structures much faster than humans could. It can predict how a material might behave based on its structure, simulate interactions, analyze data from experiments to optimize formulas. It can basically accelerate that whole discovery and refinement process compared to just traditional trial and error in the lab. The source connecting this to AI-assisted material science strongly suggests AI played a role here.
What's the bigger picture takeaway from this potentially dissolving plastic?
I think what it signals is that AI-assisted material science is truly opening doors to potentially revolutionary eco-friendly technologies. It offers a way to tackle some of our biggest environmental problems with completely new approaches. It feels like a real win for both climate and innovation, showing how advanced tech can find solutions to problems that have seemed intractable.
Frame this as a source of hope, maybe. Using advanced tech to solve big environmental problems. What are the practical hurdles to getting this kind of material into widespread use?
Well, beyond finishing the R&D, like getting that coding right, the challenges are pretty significant. You have to figure out how to manufacture it at massive scale, cheaply enough to compete with existing plastics. You need to ensure the manufacturing process itself is green. You need regulatory approvals. And then you have to convince industries, packaging, clothing, you name it, to switch from materials they've used for decades to something new, even if it is better for the planet. It's a long road from a lab discovery to being on store shelves, but the potential payoff here is enormous.
Okay, shifting to the world of creativity now, AI continues to push boundaries there too, as shown in a report about AI being used in interactive art.
Yes, the Chronicle mentioned a team of artists using Google's generative AI tools to create an interactive sculpture called Reflection Point.
What kind of artwork is it?
It's described as an immersive installation, something that blends digital elements with physical media. And the really key part is that it uses real-time audience input to actually shape the experience.
So generative AI, in this context, what's it doing? Is it creating the art itself?
It's likely acting as both a tool and maybe even a collaborator for the artists. So instead of the artist handcrafting every single visual or sound, the AI might be generating elements on the fly or creating components based on rules and prompts set by the artists. For instance, the AI could be creating dynamic visuals or sounds that respond directly to how people move in the space or sounds they make, or maybe even things they type into an interface. That real-time audience input means the artwork is constantly changing and evolving based on who's there and how they interact. It's not static.
That definitely pushes against the traditional idea of art being a fixed object created solely by the artist.
It absolutely does. Mm. This is a great example of AI becoming a powerful new medium for artists, enabling kinds of expression and interaction that just weren't possible before. It allows for these dynamic, responsive artworks that involve the viewer much more directly.
What does this mean for the relationship between AI and creativity more broadly?
I think it shows the line between art and AI is blurring significantly. AI isn't just automating old creative tasks. It's genuinely opening up new possibilities for expression, collaboration, and experience design. It's expanding what we might consider art, how it can be made, and how we can experience it.
Looking ahead now towards the future of automation, the Chronicle noted a quiet but potentially very significant new initiative inside Amazon.
Yes, apparently Amazon has quietly launched a new research group specifically focused on developing agentic AI systems and next-gen robotics.
And the goal of this new group?
The stated aim is to automate complex decision-making and physical tasks. Now, given Amazon's scale in logistics, e-commerce, cloud, this initiative is almost certainly aimed at building highly autonomous systems. Probably first for their own massive operations, but maybe eventually for new products or services too.
Let's revisit agentic AI. We touched on it earlier, but can you explain it simply again?
Sure. Think of it like this. Most current AI performs a specific task when you give it a prompt. And agentic AI is designed to be more autonomous. You give it a higher level goal, and the AI figures out the steps needed to achieve it. It can plan, execute those steps by interacting with its environment, digital or physical, monitor how it's doing, and learn from the results to get better. It's about creating AI that can act more independently and intelligently to achieve complex multi-step objectives, kind of like a capable human agent would.
So it's not just robots doing the same thing over and over, it's systems that can figure out how to get something done on their own.
Exactly. It's a step beyond simple automation towards more autonomous, intelligent action. What this Amazon initiative signifies is that agentic AI is moving from theory to practice inside a company that is relentless about operational efficiency. We should definitely expect smarter, more autonomous machines to come out of this kind of focused research.
And these kinds of advanced systems could really reshape both industries and maybe even parts of our daily lives.
Absolutely. Where might we see them first? Probably in really complex environments like Amazon's own giant warehouses or maybe advanced manufacturing plants optimizing entire workflows. Perhaps in logistics, managing fleets of delivery vehicles or drones even more intelligently than today. Eventually, bits of this could filter down into consumer robots or smarter home systems, letting devices handle more complex chores without needing constant instructions. The potential benefits are huge: efficiency, productivity. But of course, there are big questions about the impact on jobs and the absolute need for safety and reliability as these systems become more autonomous.
And finally, the Chronicle for June 6 also included updates on voice AI, specifically from 11 Labs and Bland TTS.
Yes, these updates really highlight just how fast AI-generated voices are getting better, more realistic, more expressive, more flexible.
What were the key new features from 11 Labs with their 11 V3 preview?
11 Labs announced things like emotional audio tags, letting you specify the emotion, like happy, sad, angry for the voice. They added multi-speaker dialogue support so the AI can generate a conversation between different voices. And they expanded language support to over 70 languages.
Those kinds of features, emotion, multi-speaker, seem crucial for making AI voices sound genuinely natural for things like audiobooks or podcasts.
They really are. Adding emotional range and handling back-and-forth dialogue makes AI voices far more usable for creating engaging content narration, game characters, virtual assistants, and the broad language support just opens up global uses.
And Bland TTS also had a new voice AI release.
Yeah, Bland released a new voice AI focused on improving realism and giving users more control. They specifically mentioned applications like voice cloning, building voice apps, and powering AI customer support.
Voice cloning. That's powerful, but definitely comes with ethical flags, right? But more control is useful for developers.
That's the double-edged sword. Voice cloning lets you replicate a specific person's voice, which is amazing for accessibility, like giving a voice back to someone who lost theirs, and for entertainment. But the potential for misuse in deepfakes, scams, is huge and scary. Enhanced control, though, lets developers fine-tune things like pacing, emphasis, tone for specific needs, and making AI voices better for customer support is obviously aimed at making those automated calls less painful and more natural-sounding.
So taken together, these updates from 11 Labs and Bland TTS show that AI voices are just rapidly getting more human-like, more controllable, and more versatile across the board.
They really do. And the implications are broad, impacting how content gets made, improving accessibility tools, changing how we interact with automated systems. It's a space moving very quickly.
Wow. Okay, that was quite the journey through just one single day, June 6th, 2024. And just look at the sheer range of things we covered, from massive model upgrades and fierce competition between the tech giants to these incredible, potentially life-altering applications happening right now in healthcare and logistics, and also confronting the really serious challenges like AI being misused for propaganda.
It really does hammer home that core takeaway, doesn't it? AI isn't just some abstract thing happening in labs anymore. It is hitting the real world now in so many different ways, reshaping industries, how we get healthcare, how we shop, even how information flows globally. It's tangible and impactful.
And looking at just one day like this, it makes it so clear why keeping up with AI isn't just for tech nerds. It's crucial for you listening now. These developments touch everything, the news you see online, the safety systems in your next car, how doctors might diagnose you in the future, even how quickly that package shows up at your door. Our goal with this deep dive was really to give you that shortcut, to help make sense of what's important and why it matters without you having to sift through it all yourself.
Yeah, hopefully this snapshot from the June 6th AI Daily Chronicle is giving you some valuable perspective and maybe sparks some new questions too.
So maybe here's a final thought to chew on as you think about this incredibly fast-moving field. Consider how all these seemingly separate updates we talked about today, that AI foot scanner giving weeks of warning for heart failure, that new plastic dissolving harmlessly in the ocean, Walmart's AI-driven drone delivery scaling up, OpenAI uncovering sophisticated state-backed propaganda campaigns using AI, AI helping us redate ancient history, Amazon building more autonomous agentic AI. They aren't really isolated events, are they? They're all interconnected threads weaving together into this incredibly complex tapestry of AI becoming part of our society, for better and for worse. Based on the trajectory we saw in just one day, what might tomorrow's AI Daily Chronicle reveal that sounds completely impossible today, but is actually just the next logical, maybe surprising step? Keep watching, keep thinking critically, because the future, with AI woven through it, is definitely unfolding faster than ever.